Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. Kyle's here, and that's it. It's just us two. But we're going to talk about a shit ton of camp activity, Kyle.
We have
real camp news.
The camp has been camping. Yeah, especially today. Oh my God, I have not seen beat writers so horny for a Bears practice in my lifetime. Oh my God. But you had Brad Biggs, the old hat, on the beat being like, that looked like a Lovie Smith camp practice out there today. And all the other people like, I can't remember the last time the Bears were that physical and that powerful in practice. So yeah, Ben Johnson, it sounds like I think coming out of Family Fest on Saturday, which they said was a little sloppy. I think Ben Johnson went sicko mode. And demanded a very hardcore, very physical practice today, and the Bears delivered. And it sounds like it was a pretty good operation from everyone that observed. The Bears offense looked good, but the defense had their moments too. So,
that's kind of been the theme throughout training.
Yeah, I mean, when we were here last, we were talking about how, you know, the first couple days of camp, obviously the same old Bears stuff. The offense looks pretty disjointed, and we were talking about, you know, when will we get concerned? What does the narrative, like, what? And I was just saying, like, if we're here a week from now and things haven't gotten better, I'll start to get concerned. I don't need to hear that every day, you know, is a bed of roses, but you want to be hearing back and forth. You want to be hearing that the offense looks better this time last week, this week, than it did last week. And that really seems to be the case. And, you know, we are not the kind of, I will say, it's not the narrative that you get if you check in nationally with anybody. Yeah. I cannot fuck. Did you see where fucking Colin Cowherd and shit was going off because a video went viral of Caleb missing a couple throws into a net, and then
NFC North Memor was having a great couple days with
Jesus
that.
Jesus Christ. Well, like, I guess you have to know.
No, did you see that Cowherd also said the Bears are going to finish second and make the playoffs? Like, yeah, that dude doesn't know what he's talking about at any moment.
I will say, I have never been, you know, you and I usually bitch about Bears fans doing the national media is out to get us. The national media just wants to hate, because like 99% of the time, the story arc that the national media is pushing is actually the accurate one, because usually Bears fans are like, the national media just wants to hate. They think Justin Fields can't throw the ball. The national media wants to hate. They think Mitch Trubisky's not going to take a leap forward, because the evidence is actually against you guys and that they were right. Like, a lot of times when the only people in the room saying that, like, the Bears are good are Bears fans, it usually that says something. But I will say, there, with Caleb Williams and with Jay Cutler, those are the two times that, like, more often than not, there was a concerted national media push to always portray the guy in as negative a light as possible. And with Jay, it was understandable to some degree, because I think with enough time and space and years of reflecting in therapy, I can admit that Jay Cutler is just a fucking dickhead. And I think people were preying on his downfall for the legit reason that he was a fucking dickhead. But with Caleb, it just seems like, you know, it's the Green Goblin shit. Like, the only thing they love more than a hero is to see a hero fall. You had the media that did nothing but hype Caleb Williams throughout his entire time in college, and now immediately hate him for having that hype and are constantly wanting any sign that he's a bust. And it's funny, because if you watch Caleb at all, like, I watched that video of him missing those throws and went on with my life like a normal fucking human being. But like, when he's jumping up and down, like, people pitch that as some kind of like hissy fit, like he was like, why? But like, if you know anything about Caleb, he's an intensely competitive guy. I think he probably would have the same reaction if he missed a couple dart throws, like at the bar. Like, that was just entirely a beating himself up, like, fuck me, I should have made those throws reaction. The guy was not pouting or anything, but like, it's incredible how quickly it catches fire. And it was, everyone jumped on the sloppy performance at FanFest on Saturday, and I was like looking at it, I'm like, God, you know, because I heard about it after the fact, I'm like, God, did Caleb like throw 10 interceptions at, what was it? And I look it up, and it was, oh, the offense had two delay of game penalties, and DeAndre Swift took a safety on a run from his own one in a drill, but then they ended on two scoring drives and a walk-off touchdown in the two-minute drill to end practice. And I was like, I don't know, that doesn't sound particularly disastrous to me. Like, I don't know if you know this, but like, there are going to be games this year where they might score 30 points and still have two drives where they have to fucking punt. It's two drives. It wasn't reckless turnovers, and it wasn't even necessarily entirely Caleb. There's a lot goes into people getting the offense set and getting a delay of game penalty. So it was just, it's, I mean, this is something we're going to have to deal with until he definitively proves people wrong. And I've done a great job this offseason of tuning it out, but like, God, it is exhausting. And I just feel bad for the kid because it is exhausting how many people are determined to analyze everything in the harshest light about him.
Yeah, I will say it is, it's shocking how many people are just like horny over the idea that he could be a bust, which is weird to me because you would think like most quarterbacks who go for a team that historically have like really bad luck at quarterback, usually the national media is like, oh, we hope this guy succeeds because this underdog franchise like never has a good quarterback, or like, oh, they're so snake bitten or whatever. But it really, like, people are ready for Caleb to just suck ass out there. And I, like, to me, I've tuned it out because the idea that a Ben Johnson quarterback is just going to shit the bed is, like, laughable to me. Like, to me, I think Bears fans are focusing on the offense way too much. Because, well, again, I think if Caleb died tomorrow, Tyson Bagent could probably throw for, like, 7.4 yards per attempt in a Ben Johnson offense.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'd go that far just because I'm not sure Tyson Bagent can generally throw at 7.4 yards, but
I don't know if it matters.
But, well, I mean, that's the thing that really drives me nuts is because normally, and this is, so when we were talking about, did we talk about this last? Oh, no, I think we didn't record last week. One of the things I was going to talk about last week was, to me, the thing about training camp and stuff like that is people every year, it's a push and pull. Between nothing before week one actually matters, guys, but we are always haunted by the ghosts of Bears past, you know, where it's like people tried to say training camp doesn't matter when you got the fucking apocalyptic reports coming out of Bears training camp of 2019. And then it did apparently matter because the Bears offense was terrible and Mitch was done. And same thing with Justin Fields' third training camp. And kind of something last year a little bit with the reports coming out of Bears training camp last year was it was like the offense looks pretty disjointed more often than not. And the thing is, it's like training camp matters in that you shouldn't ignore an everyday smoldering fire. Certainly not. Like if it's the Mitch Trubisky training camp and every single report every single day is, I don't know if this kid's ever seen a football. That starts to concern you after a while, and it probably should. But the main thing about training camp is I don't think that it should change your priors very much. And like you should default to actual game data and things like that. And that's where this is a distinctly different situation, guys, from the Justin Fields 2023 camp, from the Mitch Trubisky 2019 camp. Because the thing is, if you weren't a Bears fan, if you took the Bear goggles off, if you just looked at the cold, hard facts, like the odds were against Justin Fields entering that third year. His first year, you know, you can make as many excuses for him as you wanted to. You can put as much context on it. But his first year was abysmal. His second year as a passer was abysmal. History and all of the actual evidence would have told you that like the long shot was him being good. And so when camp came out and the reports were that the offense looked bad and he was still holding the ball, like it's not that training camp revealed anything new to you guys. In fact, you were mad that it didn't reveal anything new to you. You were hoping to hear that Justin had magically improved and what you got was confirmation that he was the same. Same with Mitch Trubisky. Like you were hoping to hear, yeah, entering his third year, all the things that Mitch was struggling with last year are magically gone. He's so much quicker. He's so much smarter now. He's really got the offense. He looks like a whole new guy. And what you heard instead was, hey, he still looks like Mitch Trubisky. And that concerned you because you knew already that Mitch Trubisky through 2 years was not good enough. So you knew if there was no leap coming, there was a problem. With Justin Fields, you were expecting a leap. And if there was no leap coming, you knew there were problems. With Caleb, again, there's a big difference between a quarterback's third year and his second year. We've talked about that on this podcast a million times and why the third year is the year, the now or never year, and the second year is not. But with Caleb also, like, you got to look at this. Remove the Bears from the equation. I'm telling you, you have a quarterback who was a first overall pick, Heisman Trophy winner, super talented. In his rookie year as a number one overall pick, he was, by adjusted net yards per attempt plus, he had an 88 overall. So he's about 12% worse than a league average quarterback. To put that in context next to some other number one overall picks at quarterback in their rookie years, Bryce Young was a 67 as a rookie. Trevor Lawrence was a 79. Joe Burrow was a 93. Kyler Murray was a 90. Jared Goff was a 52. He performed about the same or better than most of his first overall pick peers of recent vintage, this young quarterback. He hit the mile markers you want to see. He hit 3,000 yards passing. He hit 60% completions. He had 20 touchdown passes. He had under 10 interceptions. He had a passer rating in the 80s or whatever it was. He hit all the benchmarks. If you saw that as a rookie year from a number one overall pick, and then you were told they added a new head coach, one that was offensive-minded and had a great track record as an offensive coordinator. They also added Luther Burden. They added Colston Loveland. They added Joe Tooney. They added Jonah Jackson. They added the top free agent center. If you looked at all of those things, and you looked at the average rookie quarterback taking a leap in year two, all of the evidence, you would have no problem. If this was Caleb Williams, Seattle Seahawk, you would have no problem being like, yeah, that guy's going to take a big leap this year. All of the data would point you in that direction. It would not be the contrarian or the hopeful or the cope take to be like, yeah, I would expect that guy to be pretty good this year. That would just be what would be expected. Everyone expected Trevor Lawrence to be a lot better in year two with Doug Peterson, of all people. Still, but with the Jaguars spending big on their offense, everyone expected Joe Burrow to get better in year two, especially since they added Ja'Marr Chase. Everyone expected Kyler Murray to get better in year two, and all those guys got better in year two. Like, there's no reason you really shouldn't expect Caleb to get better in year two. And the only reason then there's this narrative that he's not is the Bears.
Well, I mean, you mentioned Joe Burrow, and it's actually kind of the opposite, right? A very similar thing happened. This narrative built up around Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase that they were just ass, that they were going to be terrible, that their training camp went awful. That for weeks and weeks, it was just, oh my God, like the Bengals have wasted all of this draft capital. Like, we're back to being the Bungles, baby. This is going to be the worst team in the NFL. And then even though they looked really good in the preseason, that narrative held. Like, it completely stuck with the Bengals through the preseason into the regular season. People were like, oh, Ja'Marr Chase can't catch. Ja'Marr Chase drops everything. Joe Burrow looks like butt. Like, this whole team is screwed up. It took weeks of them performing well for people to be like, ooh, well, look, maybe the Bengals did all right. And then just the work the national media did to sweep all of that shit under the rug, which we bring up on this podcast all the time about that training camp they had that was horrible, where they were just like, you know, that never happened. You could see the signs all along. Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, obviously, we're going to work. And it's just a similar thing here. Like, I would go a step further than you, and I would say, those training camps for Trubisky and Fields weren't even predictive. It's just, you can pull whatever you want out of training camp, man. Like, if you go back, hindsight is 20/20, right? Like, if this season goes poorly and Caleb looks shitty, all we're going to do is hear people say, remember when he missed that net? Remember when he threw up that gimme interception on one pass on fan day? Like, oh, the signs were there. But if he's really good, people are going to be like, well, obviously, they brought in Ben Johnson. Remember all those camp reports about how he was leading them down the field and confidently throwing touchdowns to Rome Odunze? Oh, all the reports about how Luther Burden and Colston Loveland were playing great in camp. Those were all Caleb's throws. Like, you could put whatever you want on training camp, but in the end, it's just, it's practice. It's install. It's learning, you know, on the go, especially with a new coach and a second year quarterback. So,
yeah. And like, I mean,
who gives a shit, you know?
It's just like, it's, yeah. And again, even Bears fans are the ones making these kind of arguments because they are so scarred. They are so damaged. Yeah. And again, but like,
that's what we need to talk about, really, is like, Bears fans are broken.
Yeah.
We are fucking broke. We did not do this to Justin Fields. We were very excited for Justin, even though we had just been through this with Mitch, and Caleb has gotten no quarter. Like,
no.
And it's not even an anger like you might expect. It's just we don't seem to be capable of believing that he could be good. We expect him to fail.
Yeah, it's just Caleb is paying for, like, fair or not. And I mean, it's definitely not fair, but like, I think there were a lot of people that were in the same boat as you and me when it came to Justin Fields, where we both said, like, if they can't make Justin Fields work,
yeah,
I'm not going to have any faith that they're going to do that. Now, you and I, and a decent chunk of us, were like, okay, well, holy shit, they managed to land a winning lotto ticket in getting this Caleb. Again, you and I were like, all right, let's do one more round.
Yeah, we didn't have the hope when we said that about Justin Fields that the Bears would end up with the first overall pick in a draft with a great quarterback.
But a lot of people didn't make that leap with us. They said that they had got to that point with Justin Fields, and then when it wasn't Justin Fields, that was it. And Caleb is paying for it has been disheartening to see a fan base that gave endless excuses and endless patience to Justin Fields, to Mitch Trubisky. I saw more people in Mitch's fourth year as a starter giving him more benefit of the doubt than Caleb got in like week four.
Jim Miller as a quarterback got way more faith year after year from Bears fans than Caleb Williams has got in year two after a fine rookie season, an average rookie season for a first round pick. Like, it's a traumatized fan base. I never thought I would see it. With us, you know, we've been there before. We were there, you know, at the end of the Cutler era. We've been through that before. And I guess maybe people just didn't feel it as acutely at that time, or I don't know what happened, but it feels like the end of the Justin Fields era really just made the majority of the Bears fan base just give up on this shit.
Well, and then
like, I'll watch, they're never going to be good. These quarterbacks will never be good.
Yeah, they're just, But it's funny, because, I mean, like, if I were to, and they said it, the national media choosing to dip their fingers in now. The thing about the national media is, like, they kind of often are, like, there's a lag with, because, I mean, it was funny, because, yeah, there was concern in, like, people were definitely doing the here we go again when the first couple days of camp, it wasn't exactly looking great for the offense. But like, I would say by last Friday, like, or by Friday before Family Fest even happened, like, the narrative, at least in the local media, was that like, Caleb's been really sharp these last three, four practices. The offense is getting better every day. And even Saturday, like, yes, they came out slow. They had a couple bad drives derailed by penalties. They had that, they were stuffed at the one in a drill that literally started at their own one, which, again, that's another reason why evaluating on practice is stupid, because how often, like, people hear Bears offense struggles at Family Fest and everyone immediately goes to the quarterback must look like shit. But what the hell is Caleb Williams supposed to do about a drill that starts at their own one where DeAndre Swift gets stuffed for a safety? Like, people just need to calm down there. But yeah, then the local narrative was like, yeah, the offense is looking a lot better. Caleb's looked pretty sharp. He's been very accurate the last couple of days. And then, you know, Family Fest happened. There's a lot of eyes on it. A TikTok goes viral. Ben Johnson says the offense was sloppy. And he was specifically referring to penalties, for fuck's sake. Not even like Caleb's performance, just penalties. Right. Saying the offense looked sloppy. But even in that practice, the local media was like, yeah, the offense started slow. They ended really strong in the 2-minute drill. Great touchdown pass from Caleb to Loveland to walk it off. Like, the Bears local media is as jaded and cynical as everybody, but that wasn't even what they were choosing to focus on. But the national media runs with this Caleb Williams struggling in camp thing, and it really turned around the whole dialogue that had been building the couple of days before that about how much better things were looking.
Yeah, it's just so weird, because like you say, it feels like everything had been like really positive for Caleb, like a solid week. And yeah, just the national media was like, we're going to pick out this where he misses a throw into a net, which
the
is
net
going
thing
to happen in a game.
And
we're
going to
pick out this one play from hours of practice in front of fans, and we're just going to show people those two, and we're going to be like, this kid is a bust. And quite frankly, I got to bring it back to Joe Burrow's second year. They did the same thing to him and Jamar Chase. They picked out like, oop, a Jamar Chase drop. Oop, another Jamar Chase drop the next day. And ESPN was just like, let's put them all together. He drops balls. Like, he can't catch balls. Joe Burrow would miss a couple passes. They'd get something on film, and that's all you see. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh God, do these guys suck? Because that's the narrative they want to sell for whatever reason. Hopefully this ends the same way. Now you brought up Ben Johnson, the sloppy comment, and that is a good transition into how Ben has handled this training camp, because it's been like maybe a whole 180 from previous camps. And sloppy, I think what we're finding out about Ben Johnson is his mortal enemy. That might be the dirtiest word you can say to Ben Johnson. If there's going to be one thing you're going to be, it is at the line where you need to be. You are going to get there in the exact way he wants you to get there. You are going to run the play the exact timing that he wants you to run the play and see what he wants you to see. And if you are not there, he will sit your ass on the bench. It could be one player. It could be the whole offense. He will eviscerate your ass. He is a stickler for the details in a way that Matt Eberflus was basically the exact opposite. Him and Waldron were kind of like, hey, whatever. I don't know. It's I'm just happy to be here, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's also part of it, is that Ben Johnson's not going to do them any favors in terms of headlines, because I think he's going to be perpetually disappointed with their performance, because he sounds like he is a stickler for the details in every way, which again is it's what this team needed. We talked about that last week. We were like, if you could describe the 2024 Bears in one word, it's sloppy. Yeah. And that was really interesting too, with the beat writers being so horny for how tough and physical this practice was today. It really is interesting to see how every day we discover in more ways how full of shit Matt Eberflus was, because Eberflus preached this tough, physical, hard-nosed, disciplined hits principle, but everyone's talking about these practices so far in this Ben Johnson training camp like they've never seen a real practice before. Like, it's so much more intense, so much more disciplined, so much more hard-nosed than anything Eberflus did last year. And Shane Waldron was being openly criticized by Cole Kmet and guys for being way too lackadaisical and not calling guys out and not getting guys organized. So it's like, man, you told us the whole reason that we had to have Matt Eberflus was because he was a leader of men and a disciplinarian. And now you're telling me that like all of that was bullshit. Like, why did you do this?
Right. Yeah. I think, what was it? The fourth day in camp, I think that Ben Johnson made the remark that we are almost there pre-snap. And when he says that, he means literally getting into the huddle at the right spots, breaking it in a timely manner, and then leaving the huddle to get to your spots in the exact way he wants you to, and lining up in the correct place on time. Like, 4 days into camp, he was like, you know what? We've almost got it, guys. We're almost ready to tackle everything else that happens, you know, while you play football. And it's just it's so refreshing. When I remember last year, and you and I sat here for the first 4-5 games of the Bears season, just like, boy, it sure looks like the offensive line isn't sure who they're supposed to block. And we're like, is that growing pains? Like, we're hoping it's growing pains. Or like, wow, it sure seems like Caleb is firing at a place where a wide receiver is supposed to be, but they're not there. Like, is that because the offense is complicated, or is it because they're not coached well? And it was just like, over and over and over again, like, wow, it feels like they don't have the details. It feels like nobody really knows what they're supposed to be doing right now. So to have a coach come in who's like, hey guys, like, you got to walk before you can run. Matter of fact, you have to stand still in the right fucking spot before I will let you walk. Like, that is very badly what this team needs. Very weird for me to be in a position to be saying that, because I'm normally the guy who's like, whoa, don't be such a red ass out there, you know, like, God, calm the fuck down. But after last season, I'm definitely like, just smack all these guys in the face. Like, everybody here needs this so desperately. And I'm glad they're getting it. I do think, Kyle, that Bears fans are almost like, it's like they've forgotten who they got as a head coach at this point. I feel like they've put so much on Caleb Williams that they are forgetting. Like, yeah, we've hired offensive coaches before, guys. I understand that. Matt Nagy was a puppet in the Andy Reid scheme. He wasn't even calling plays. So that was like, that's a whole different ball game there. Mark Trestman, the offensive coach before that, was coming out of Canada after having failed his way out of the NFL and the NCAA in succession. This is the best offensive coordinator in the NFL from the last 2 years, and probably a top five offensive coordinator the year before that. Like, this is a qualified NFL offensive mind who took, you know, a guy who you call a C-tier quarterback in Jared Goff, and he's getting, you know, absolute Pro Bowl stats, like over 8 yards per attempt, just the one of the most insane offenses in the NFL out of a quarterback who many people would have seen as like top half of the league at best before he got together with Ben Johnson. So like, maybe lay off Caleb a little bit and just remember that if there is anything guaranteed on this team, it's that Ben Johnson is going to score some points here. Like, this is the premier offensive mind in the NFL over the last 2 to 3 years. And the pessimism is just, it's shocking me. And I'm usually, we're usually on here talking about pessimistic stuff to the point that I'm like, Kyle, I don't know. Should we be so pessimistic this week? Can we talk about something positive? This is that moment. This is that fucking moment, Bears fans. Like, yeah. Please rein yourselves back in. Like, it is,
yeah,
it is not doom and gloom. The Bears have looked pretty good in camp so far, and they have a really solid staff in place. I just, like you said, like, strip the name off the nameplate. Like, just ignore that we're the Bears. Things are going pretty good for this team.
I mean, if you saw even just like a team like the Jets do all of this, you would think they were pointed in the right direction. Like, it's, people just do not want to buy in on the Bears. And I mean, no one should get that more than us, but like at the same time, like, if we are going to push back on people when they are being irrational homers, it's also important to push back on them when they're being irrational doomers. And like, if you are laying about a facts-based case about the Bears, the evidence should point you in the direction that like they're going to be better. They just are. Like, so breathe, calm down. Speaking of highlights, speaking of positive things, since we last recorded, Luther Burden took the practice field. And after hilariously, oh my God, this literally the seconds, the tweets being seconds apart, being Luther Burden is in with the ones. 2 seconds later, Luther Burden got kicked out of the drill by Ben Johnson for not being lined up correctly. It made me laugh. But then he went on. I mean, there were about two solid days there, I feel like, where the tweet over and over again was, holy shit, Luther Burden. It's been a little quieter. Although I guess he had a touchdown today, supposedly, with Tyson Bagent throwing him early.
And fucking, by the way, Team Cancer Luther Burden, when asked about that, said, yeah, hell yeah, he should yell at me. I was in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
What a disruption Luther Burden
is. Yeah, it was just like, yeah, that's Ben Johnson, man. If you don't do things the way Ben Johnson wants you to do them, you're not going to play for Ben Johnson, and that's fine.
He was like, oh, thank God this guy told me I was in the wrong spot and I was punished for being there. Like, great.
Yeah.
That's the way it should be. Thank you, Luther.
Yeah, the details freaking matter. So Luther Burden's looked good, which that was another one where people were dooming and glooming. I think it was fucking, I can't remember which god-awful local Bears station it was, but something like when he didn't practice the first couple days of camp, there was someone like, Luther wasn't brought here to be a burden. Like, shut the fuck up. Just shut the fuck up.
Just shut up, guys.
Just shut up. You really want, like, what? You want them to rush a guy back from a calf injuries to make sure he's there to be wide receiver 4 the first week of training camp just to prove that he's tough? Like, God damn, you're all balls. But
yeah. Another note that I guess we just forgot to mention pertaining to Burden. It seems like Ben Johnson has like a very serious structure when it comes to bringing guys back from being injured.
Yeah.
And easing them back into things, which is another thing Eberflus didn't have any kind of like rhyme or reason for when a guy would practice, when a guy wouldn't.
Well, that was something I wanted to note too, is that like the Bears have, knock on wood, been lucky so far in offensive in camp as far as injuries go, but also in that they have been able to play their starting 5 offensive linemen so far every day, pretty much. I think Jonah Jackson's missed a day. And obviously there's a battle going on at left tackle, which we should probably talk about here in a minute, but yeah, there's a battle going on at left tackle. But they have been able to consistently run the main unit out there with their offensive line with the ones every day, which I feel like that never happened, not one time in a single Eberflus training camp. The chaos at center, the injuries to the guards, you know, Tevin Jenkins being sometimes fictional, that was always a problem. So that's been a sigh of relief. But yes, Luther Burden dominating. And then shortly after Luther Burden had his day in the sun, it became the weekend week slash of Colston Loveland, who has been all over the place in camp the last couple of days. The reports very much are that he's, you know, kind of like we said, watching it, like he's just a matchup nightmare as a tight end. He's just that rare tight end that can separate against man coverage. If you watched the touchdown pass that Caleb threw to him to end FanFest, the way he used his feet to just completely freeze Brisker in place and then snap, cut that route inside. And Caleb, by the way, throwing that ball with anticipation in the middle of the field between two defenders in the red zone. We love to see it. But yeah, I mean, Colston Loveland is, he's a weapon. The hard not. It was funny. I was re-listening to our post-draft recap the other day. And you know, when the Bear, we said multiple times before the pick was made that if the Bears were going to take a tight end, we both wanted it to be Loveland, not Tyler Warren.
Yeah.
So glad we got that on air, but we were both, you know, we were like, you know, I hope it's not a situation where they have to take a tight end. And even as we were grading it, reviewing it, you were like, yeah, I'm not really like, I like Colston Loveland. I'm sure I'd be useful. I can't say I'm excited about the pick and excited about tight end at 10. I was like, give me till July. I'll probably make myself actually excited about Colston Loveland. It's August 5th. I'm pretty fucking excited about Colston Loveland. I really am. He's going to be, well, and again, I try to temper expectations for rookie tight ends because usually they don't do anything, but the last rookie tight end to really do a whole lot in the NFL was Sam Laporta with Ben Johnson. So it's like, well, if a rookie tight end's going to do something, it could very well be this one. And yeah, the reports in camp are just him and Caleb already seem to have a good connection. He just seems to have an innate understanding of how to get open, where the ball's going to be. And yeah, he's a matchup nightmare. He's just a true kind of weapon. They truly haven't had a tight end since Greg Olsen was roaming these parts. Now, granted, I'm not going to say he's going to be as good as Greg Olsen, but they really haven't had a tight end who was a great athlete / separator since G-Reg. Cause Martellus Bennett was pretty good. I don't know that I would say his game was being able to separate against man coverage and stuff. He's more in the mold of like a Komet. And then Komet, useful guy. You obviously love him more than I do, but his whole game is more being the guy that finds the soft hole in your zone coverage. But Colston, just like a dynamic athlete that can beat your guy in your man coverage.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited for Cole, honestly, because it looks like his role in this offense is going to be to block and then occasionally slip out unnoticed and just be wide fucking open and catch like 30-yard touchdowns when nobody's around him.
Well, that also happened at FanFest. They ran a nice play action tight end leak play, and Cole Komet was wide ass open. So.
Yeah, you just see the entire Bears defense is like, well, Cole Komet doesn't exist, so I'm going to go this way. And he's just open and he's gone. And it feels like that's just what the Bears are going to use him as. So good for him. He's going to get some touchdowns this year for sure. But yeah, I mean, you know, like I said at the time, I feel like if Luther Burden went 10th and Colston Loveland went the second round, I'd be like, perfect draft. It's just the weird way that it was flopped. I don't think it's going to matter in the end, but Luther Burden still obviously has all of the talent he had. This is a guy who was the best wide receiver in that draft class all the way through until like a month before the draft, when mysteriously he was like a bad guy with all of these concerns and shit regarding his team. But like before that, he was like a top 10 pick easy. He was the best wide receiver in the draft. People had him over Tetairoa McMillan like the entire way because of his insane speed and his ability to break away from people and his agility and his after the catch ability. And just for him to be sitting there at 39 was completely insane. And it's nice to see that Ben Johnson, if anything, it feels like maybe Ben Johnson has like both eyes on Luther Burden as a wide receiver here for the future. And maybe one less eye on Roma Dunze than you would think, I guess, as Bears fans looking at where they were drafted. But quite honestly, I feel like if Burden had been able to come out a year prior, he would have been in that same group with MHJ and neighbors.
I don't know that I would have had.
With the season he had, yeah, people were talking about him.
I still don't know
that
as a prospect. I mean, do you remember the season Rome had? I don't know that he would have. Would not have been above Rome on anybody's draft board.
He would have been in that grouping. Like, who you would have picked, I don't fucking know.
He would not have been in that top three. He would not. Now you are. Now you are. Homering a little bit.
Do you want me to go back and check? I can check while we're chatting here. But I believe he had like basically the same kind of.
Hey, I'm not talking about the statistics. He was not considered.
Well, statistically, whatever. Like Rondale Moore would be the king if we were going by statistics. But I'm talking about like draft hype. Let's see. We had at the time.
I mean, again, also Luther is only 6 foot, 209 pounds. I mean,
Rome's
not...
overall grade was an 89.7 as far as draftability. Let me see.
According to who?
Draft Buzz, and they kind of pull their number is like how high do we think this guy would go in the average draft, essentially? And I think, hold up, let me fucking find. 2005 draft. I wonder how far he fell. Actually.
I mean, if Luther Burden had been in the 2024 draft, I probably think he would have been.
And Burden had fallen to an 87.5 by the time the draft.
I think he would have been wide
because
receiver.
Of the year he had, which was quite bad, which is why he got this.
I think Burden would have been like wide receiver 5 behind Brian Thomas Jr., but ahead of the rest of those guys, probably where I think he would have been if he'd come out a year early. But yeah, no, I think I think in terms of usage, I think it's a good thing that Ben Johnson is talking about Roma Dunze being the prototypical X and leaving him at X and just letting Rome handle that one spot. But I think, you know, when you think of Ben Johnson, you think wide receiver, you think of Amon-Ra St. Brown and all the, you know, the yeah. Swiss Army knife that he is in that offense. And I do think it's much more likely that as time goes by, you will see Amon-Ra in that position than you ever will see Roma Dunze. So if you're asking me if there's a possibility that someday there's a version of this offense where Luther Burden gets more targets and is featured more than Rome, yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah, I think that's basically the idea at this point. Like, Rome is my kind of prototypical wide receiver, right? He's big, he goes up, he makes contested
catches.
Yeah,
he's an outside ball winner.
Right, and I fucking love that guy. And Burden is not really that kind of dude. He's like a catch and run, a separator.
I mean, Burden is, I mean, as we talked about at draft, the guy that you, Burden is DJ Moore. Like, that's yeah. the guy that they just went and got another DJ Moore.
Right, so, like, who do I think is going to fit better into the Ben Johnson offense? Well, we've seen that before. It's Luther Burden. But I think, obviously, this is like no slander to Roma Dunze. It's just kind of what I don't want to say it as a negative, but, you know, this coach picked this guy. He picked the two rookies who are in this right. offense. So obviously he likes.
Yeah, them. No, I mean, there's definitely both of them were 100% Ben Johnson picks. And it, you know, he definitely wanted his guys. Even if he was happy with the guys that he inherited, he still wanted his guys. So
right, and I mean, what, like, the things that he has wanted in his offenses with the Lions hasn't been, you know, the big dominant Randy Moss dude on the outside. It's been Amon-Ra St. Brown, and it's been two different Iowa tight ends over the middle. So that's what he drafted Amon-Ra St. Brown, and he drafted what is essentially an Iowa tight end to go over the middle. So I understand. And yeah, again, it's
insulted a lot of Michigan fans who are like, you wish.
He's a decent Michigan tight end. Look, they sent us one of their tight ends, and it turns out he wasn't Iowa enough of a tight end, and he didn't even end up getting drafted. All right. Look, Michigan fans, you have a fucking national title now. Like, do we need to fight poor Iowa Hawkeyes fans? Give us our tight ends. All right. But yeah, the reason it's very clear why he drafted who he drafted is what I'm saying. So I'm not shocked that he's like, what I'm going to do with a Roma Dunze. I have a Luther Burden now. I have a Colston Loveland. These are the things that I like in this world.
Yeah.
How was about you get me a running back I like instead of these schlubs? I understand. This is what happened.
I did enjoy Ben Johnson saying, you know, those guys in our running back room, they hear what people are saying about them. They hear that people think they're shitty and awful. They hear that they think you guys suck and aren't very fast. Who's saying these things? Ben, is this just your way of telling them that that's what you think? But he's like, yeah, they're using it for motivation. So
I like that Ben Johnson is putting up motivating quotes in the running back room, and all the quotes are attributed to Ben Johnson.
To Ben Johnson.
You fucking suck. Quote, Ben Johnson.
Doing the Principal Seymour. Prove me wrong, kids. Prove me wrong.
That's right. Yeah.
Anyways, one other thing. We did need to talk about, well, I guess two things, because these two things tie together. The Bears did release their first depth chart of the summer today.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot there that's noteworthy, but I did find a couple things worth mentioning. Number one is, and this was kind of a surprise, I guess, because it sure seems like Ozzie's been getting the majority of reps with the ones. But as far as their left tackle competition goes, they did list Braxton Jones as the starting left tackle with Ozzie behind him. Kieran Amagaji is listed as the backup right tackle, but it definitely seems like, and based on the reps the last couple days too, it seems like they have narrowed that left tackle competition down from a 3-man race to a 2-man race, with Kieran being firmly stuck now in swing tackle territory, which is not a surprise to any of us, and absolutely how it should be. But yeah, right now Braxton, at least according to the depth chart, is still the starting left tackle. How do you feel about that, Travis?
I think it makes sense for now, and I think it's also kind of a political move. Like, hey, as long as you can round back into form, like come back from the injury, you're not going to lose your job here. But also, it does seem like it's kind of like the opposite of a double-edged sword. It's a double-edged sword in a good way, right? It's you get Braxton Jones.
I didn't realize double-edged swords were starter. Bad. I think swords are awesome.
Thank you. Fuck, you God. Finally, somebody says it.
Okay.
Like swords with like two edges.
Pro sword here.
I mean, I also obviously, you know, as a weeb, just love the single edge swords, but double edge swords, like, absolutely positive. Anyway, the idea is you have Braxton Jones, you have Ozzie Trapio. You're saying Braxton Jones is going to start. You give him that confidence while he's going out there. Ozzie is still getting a ton of reps while you have this competition, and also Braxton Jones is coming off an injury. He's an offensive lineman. There's a pretty good chance that Ozzie is going to be starting multiple games this year, even if he's not named the starter. So, like, just go into it this way. You're really not losing anything here. I think any pragmatic offensive coordinator, which Ben Johnson obviously is going to be like, well, both of these guys are going to start. Like, offensive linemen go down. It happens all the fucking time. So, yeah, it's almost the easy choice, because you don't want to piss Braxton off, because you're going to need him, even if you think Ozzie is the better left tackle to start. You're like, well, like, one, these guys are going to get hurt. We're going to need these guys out here. Why would I shit in Braxton Jones's cereal like this early in camp before he's had a chance to round back into shape after this injury? So I don't know how much I believe that yet, because all the word coming out of camp so far has been like Ozzie Trapio's like the better left tackle right now.
I will say it did sound like he had a pretty rough day at the Fan Fest on Saturday, specifically with Montez Sweat. So
don't we all? Don't we all have rough days against Montez Sweat? But yeah, I mean, God, hopefully it's not a situation where we actually have no good options, because Braxton is still in bad shape.
Yeah, I don't think that'll be the case, certainly. Yeah, and it's just one of those situations. It's unfortunate for Braxton, but just given the contract situation and the, you know, the org, it's one of those situations where unless he is clearly, definitively the runaway winner of the competition, you kind of have to give it to Ozzie. Because if it's at all close, then you know, the organization's got to find out what they have in the kid and get significantly cheaper in the process. Unfortunately, it's a brutal business, but that is the reality there.
Yeah. I mean, this is, as the number one fan of Braxton Jones, I feel like, on this planet,
yeah.
Maybe number two. I think Ryan Poles is probably number one. I might be number two. But even I know, like, God, I saw those contracts last offseason.
Right.
Braxton is going to cost too much money.
Yeah. They're looking at a world where, what's his name? The Dan Moore.
Yes. The now Steelers tackle.
Yeah. They're looking at a world where Dan Moore, no, he was a Steeler. He's now a Titan. Yeah. They're looking at a world where Dan Moore is getting $20 million a year. And they're not able to justify paying Braxton that if Ozzie can be anything resembling passable as a tackle, unfortunately.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Other things on the depth chart. I guess I was pleasantly surprised, I guess, that they did still list Tyson as QB2 over Case Keenum. I sort of thought Case might just get the main backup job as the offensive coordinator's, you know, his chosen veteran guy. But no, it sounds like Tyson Bagent has, and Ben Johnson was quite effusive at his praise of Tyson today. So good for Tyson that he's executing and earning Ben's trust as well.
Yeah, it's so funny because I think that's another thing where the narrative got set immediately, right? Because the first thing we heard without pads on, like the very first day of camp, was, ooh, Case Keenum looking really comfortable, like completing a lot of passes really on time. Caleb looks out of sorts. And I feel like that just stuck in people's brains. And they were like, is Case Keenum the clear number two quarterback? Like, is he going to push Caleb Williams?
Because Case Keenum's 1,000 years old and has played in every system forever. So, yeah, I mean, of course he's going to pick things up a little quicker.
Yeah, unfortunately, folks, the rest of camp happened. And, yeah, Tyson Bagent is a pretty darn good backup quarterback, which Ben Johnson can see. And, you know, Case can hang out and, I guess, collect a How old is Case Keenum, Kyle? I was watching him play...
He was
at Houston
way back in the first Obama administration. He's 37 now.
Oh, that's bad because I'm 36 and I think of him as ancient.
Yes. Well, we are ancient. So, yeah, he was in college the same. That's how old he is. He was in college the same time we were in college. So,
right. Exactly. Yeah. And I wasn't even talking about the Texans. I was talking about where he went to college.
And he'll always have that one year with the Vikings where he was insanely good. The Jeff George career arc there, when you have
really,
that one year,
yeah,
that one random year with the Minnesota Vikings. Everybody's got one.
Gus Frerotte, another great example there.
Yes.
But yeah, just career being elongated by having one
good season. Yeah, if this podcast was like start Gus Frerotte, we would have, that would be our annual tournament, was random quarterback who had one best quarterback who had one good year as a Minnesota Viking.
Brad
Johnson versus Gus Frerotte versus Jeff George versus Randall Cunningham versus Case Keenum versus Sam Bradford.
Holy shit, Vikings.
Versus Sam Darnold. Yeah. That would be
a couple quarterback related things. God, I'm going to bury this in this episode, but we got an email, we got a comment, we got a comment made to you directly about the Alex Smith Event Horizon, and I do want to clear this up somewhere because I could swear that I mentioned it, but I actually didn't. I went back and listened. In order for that to take effect, you cannot have been good for any of your first 6 years in the NFL.
Yeah, no,
because I got a lot of people being like, what about Kyler Murray? What about he's coming up, but it doesn't work if you were good. You don't actually just get a bump in your seventh year. Like Pat Mahomes didn't just get a big bump in year seven for existing. It's, you have to be bad. You can't have like basically been above average.
Right, yeah, because one example someone put out to me is like, well, how come Carson Wentz has had 50 starts and he still sucks ass?
Right,
because Carson Wentz was good early on and then shredded his knee and then just became a totally different player. Like, that's a different story entirely, yeah. That's more like, I think, what did I call that? The Jim Everett cliff, where a guy is like really good through his 4 years and then just completely collapses for no apparent reason.
And the examples I always think of are Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, two guys who had very good years within their first two seasons,
yes,
and then kind of like turned mediocre, and people kind of like gave up on them. They didn't, like, they both got chances to start after their seventh year. And it's not like they rose back to form or anything. They're just kind of still the guys they are. So if you peak in year two, you don't just get a bump in year seven. That's who you are. That suggests that you understood what you were learning and people figured you out. And now they know you. And that's it for your NFL career. Now this is who you are. And I'm sorry. Apparently I offended people by suggesting that Daniel Jones might have a good year because, like, I guess I pissed a couple people off.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty fucking stupid. You should feel bad. But, right. Like, I mean,
and again, you and I,
guys, go easy on him.
You and I both said, we're kind of hoping he fails so I can be like, okay, now I know exactly what this is.
We have to know that there is a limit to, right. Yeah, like, there has to be a level at which you are too bad. Again, Daniel Jones is a contradiction because, so usually the Daniel Jones event horizon, or the Alex Smith event horizon.
Daniel Jones. We're going to call it that if it works.
The guy we mostly see, the archetype that we see is a guy who was physically talented, mm-hmm. was taken in the first round, and then was thrown into a shit situation, got no help, and then eventually figured it out later. Due to a combination of reps, situation, etc. Sam Darnold, if he is at all good in Seattle, is the perfect example of this because this is a guy who, one, he had, you know, super physically talented, great arm, came out of USC very raw, only had, you know, like 700 or something drop, barely more than Mitch Trubisky, I know, drop back wise. He was one of the less experienced guys in the spreadsheet. So he didn't have a ton of experience. Needed development to begin with, and then was just dropped in an abysmal situation with the Jets. Eventually figured it out, if that's what happened. Same with Alex Smith. He was a super talented guy at Utah, but he played at Utah in the Urban Meyer spread offense, which was a very, very not NFL offense. And he played in the NFL long enough ago that, like, they didn't, you know, there's before the NFL itself adapted a lot of spread elements, you know. Nowadays that transition's not as jarring as it used to be because you have a lot of air raid and spread elements in the NFL. But in 2004 you did not have that. At one point they made this poor fucker play for Mike Martz, for God's sakes, on a terrible 49ers organization. But he was always a physically gifted dude. He was a number one overall pick for a reason. Daniel Jones is not those guys. Daniel Jones is right. A guy that is a fourth round talent that was way overdrafted. And the argument for him was that it was the Kenny Pickett argument. It's like, yes, he's not the most talented guy in the world, but he's NFL ready. And it still cracks me up that 6 years later, we still have Daniel Jones and that the narrative shifted so quickly because the minute he sucked as a young player, people should have been like, well, we drafted him to be NFL ready. He obviously wasn't NFL ready, so he brings nothing to the table. But instead, the Giants shifted the narrative to like, well, he needs help. You got to give this guy time to develop. When did you stop letting? And I was like, but there's nothing there to develop. This isn't Josh Allen, where you're waiting for the light to come on. His light's been on. It's just dim as fuck. So.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I mean,
it's
the reason.
His light is on, but it's a bug zapper. Like, anything that goes near, it's just going to die. So. Yeah.
I mean, if you go back to that episode last year where I'm like, Kyle, I swear to God, Sam Darnold is like the archetype for the Alex Smith effect. And you, like, kind of pause and you're like, no. Yeah. You're like, wait a minute, like, you can feel the full weight of this
Sam
horrible
was
thing that was about to happen.
Well, Sam Darnold was definitely, he is the archetype of a guy who is a perfect candidate for it.
Yes.
Because, again, super talented, didn't have a lot of experience in college, landed in a bad situation. My skepticism for Sam Darnold was that we had not seen a guy who had been that bad that long. I mean, Sam Darnold was truly fucking horrible.
Like one of the worst quarterbacks.
Those years with the Jets and that year with the Panthers. I mean, that all time, like, a historically bad quarterback. So I didn't know how far you could push it. And so that's where, so Daniel Jones is one point of evidence for, like, yeah, even if you're really fucking bad, if you're a talented dude and you end up in the right situation and you have enough reps, you still can turn it around somehow.
Yeah, if the problem
Daniel
is
Jones,
if Daniel
Jones can also do it, then it's just like, wow, there's just, I mean, at some point, anybody who gets enough NFL quarterback right can eventually put together a passable season, I guess.
But it's almost like bad news if Daniel Jones succeeds here, because that really does suggest that fourth round quarterbacks could do this.
Well, then I think it gives hope to too many teams. It would be a bad thing. It would be a really terrible thing if Daniel Jones was good this year and that had happened like before the Justin Fields Caleb Williams debate happened, because then, oh my god, people would be up my ass about that too. Because my whole thing with Caleb, with Justin Fields and why it was time to move on, is that after year three we don't see these guys improve like that, and so there'd be someone going, what about Daniel Jones, he did it in year seven.
We'd be like, yeah, we know, we have,
but I do think that I do think that an important part of the Alex Smith paradox is that it does
event
not,
horizon the event horizon, horizon
is that it does not happen if the quarterback stays in the same spot, like, yes, you have change of scenery, well, change of environment is important.
Well, there is the exception is of course the namesake Alex Smith,
but even then, like,
but the real idea is to essentially change organizations,
right?
And moving to Jim Harbaugh as a coach was a whole different thing.
Sure is a culture change. So and Jim Harbaugh is his own culture change. There's no denying that.
Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman. Can't believe I'm saying that for that situation. And right now, like, holy shit, those guys have been through a lot, but they're back together again doing this.
The say what same you about shit. Jim Harbaugh, man. He's got his ride or dies. That's for sure. So
he does like meat definitely is ride or die. Whole milk. That's Jim Harbaugh's ride or die. okay, hold up. We got like a couple minutes left here. The one thing I did want to say about Caleb Williams is it feels like this media narrative has really overshadowed J.J. McCarthy's media narrative, which has been buried a little bit, but is pretty eerie. Like, we're getting like one line in an article on ESPN, like way down the list on training camp reports, that are like, J.J. McCarthy's having some trouble. Like, a little concerning out there. And then, you know, a few days later, it's like, ooh, the Vikings might be looking to add a veteran presence behind J.J. McCarthy. And it's just like, that's just another layer to the frustration for me, is like, I guess we're just going to shit on Caleb nationally, even though he was the number one pick. This is year two. Like, he was actually okay last year, like 20 touchdowns to 6 interceptions, shouldn't be the nail in your professional coffin. And J.J. McCarthy just kind of gets the hide over there in Minnesota. So it should be a fun week one matchup for me personally, because at this point, like, if you thought I thought J.J. McCarthy sucked coming out of the draft, oh, I am going to be like bloodshot eyes, fire coming out of my ears during that game to see him just throw interceptions and get sacked. And
yeah,
I'm ready, Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about not ignoring smoke. There definitely is a lot of smoke out of Vikings camp right now that J.J. McCarthy. And again, I'm not going to allow that to overcome my priors, but my prior is that I really am not sure about J.J. McCarthy. Like, I think he was a guy who did not get a lot of reps in college, and him losing an entire year of his development, not the best, and to be put onto a team that obviously has Super Bowl aspirations from the jump. Not even saying that, you know, J.J. McCarthy's struggling in camp, he's probably a bust, might not mean that, but you know, if you remember a couple years ago, there were a lot of similar reports about Jordan Love really struggling in his first camp as the Packers starter. And you know, you could look at what Jordan Love has done since and say, well, that ended up, obviously that didn't matter at all. But if you remember that first 8 weeks of that first season where he was a starter, he was really fucking bad. So like, if nothing else, it might be, at least for the Bears, a good sign, since they get him week one, that J.J. McCarthy, even if he does eventually figure it out, probably not going to have it all figured out week one. So that would be nice.
I just wonder how Kevin is going to respond. Like, you have a guy with an arm like Sam Darnold, like whipping it over to the sidelines, and then you get J.J. McCarthy out there and he's like, throwing with all his might, and it takes like 5 full minutes to get over there throwing that nice 10-yard out route in the NFL. I wonder how he's going to react to that. Do I sound like I have like an agenda against J.J. McCarthy? I might. This is a guy who said coach in college won a national championship by not using him at all. So I don't know. I'm getting angry on Caleb's behalf at this point, just to like maybe kick some fight back into this fucking fan base, I guess, to wrap this back around to the beginning. Like, just please be on the side of your team at this point. Like, we, if they suck, guys, we will have plenty of time to be mad at them. We'll have plenty of time to talk about how this all failed and burned to the ground. Like, you don't need to do it right now before it starts.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I think that's a good place to stop for now. We have the, I guess, the first preseason games this weekend. I don't really know. It depends on if, the, say, the starters will play and if I'll even make the effort to watch that live or just try to catch the highlights after. But more importantly, there are joint practices on Friday with
the Dolphins.
So I am interested in hearing how that sounds, because today was the last day of install for the Bears offense. I would... You know, not going to go to red alert if Caleb doesn't set the world on fire against the Dolphins, but I would like to hear that the Bears offense looks like a cohesive unit when they're playing not their own defense for the first time in a while. So that would be a good thing to look forward to.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, just given how the NFL has gone, it feels like these joint practices are of much greater importance than the preseason.
Yeah, they're kind of replacing the preseason. So,
yeah. All right. Well, I'll be excited to talk to you again next week.
Well, and last year, that was one of the few false flags of hope that we got, was Caleb looked very good in joint practices against the Bengals. And what we learned from last year's regular season is that that just meant that the Bengals defense fucking sucked. were so bad. They were just historically awful. But at the time, we sure thought it said something about the Bears offense. So
that's right. So remember, so folks, remember, again,
even if it's hindsight good news, is 2020, you know, don't get too high. Don't get too low. Slow that's and steady right. wins the race. And,
yeah, you know, absolutely.
Speaking of, Keenan Allen just re-signed with the Chargers. So all best of luck to him.
Yeah. Go Chargers. But not more than the Bucks and not more than the Bears.
What do the Chargers and the Bucks have to do with anything?
That's my rating of non-Bears teams this year. It goes Bears, and then I'll cheer for the Bucks, and then I'll cheer for the Chargers. They're number three. Well, my home's in the Delta. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Way out on that bumper floor. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago. And people I show hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.